All right, good evening, everyone. For those of you who are just here because it's the Keg on Monday night, well, welcome to a holiness presentation we're going to have tonight on the Holy Land. A good number of us are going to go to the Holy Land at the end of November, the 1st of December. So Tony Meek is here to kind of give us a little warm-up about what we're doing and where we're going to go and what we might be able to see. And to kind of give you a little, little background and things that we might be able to enjoy. So it is we're looking at this screen over here.
Yep, this screen over here.
Okay. So Mr. Tony V. Tony goes to our neighboring parish, St. Joseph's in Andale. So why don't we go ahead and say a prayer, and then we will begin. The Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Heavenly Father, thank you for the many blessings about this day, and thank you, dear Jesus, for the rain. Amen. Amen. That's good enough. In the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Thank you, Father York, for the introduction. So just a show of hands, I know I've talked tonight to several of you here. How many have been to the Holy Land before? And when I get done, I'm going to go through this fairly quickly. I don't want this to be back in my day before I retired. We call it death by PowerPoint. Yeah. I don't want this to be death by PowerPoint. But at the end, if you have questions, feel free to come up and talk to me. My wife, who's over there by the Bud Light sign, not that I'm a fan of Bud Light, but yeah, she's over there by that sign. And the couple sitting next to her, Wayne and Terry Youngers, we're also on this same trip. So if you have questions when we get done, I'm sure any of us would be happy to answer those questions. If you're traveling, I know there's a couple ladies here that are traveling with Father Darrell Beffert this fall, this spring, late January, early February time frame. This minus towards the end, we went to Jordan on our trip. He's not going back to Jordan, he said, but a lot of this would be what you would see. I've seen what I think is the itinerary for the trip Father York is taking in November, and different order, but a lot of the same places. In fact, they get to go a couple places we didn't get to, I think, because of timing. But anyhow, and so my very capable niece or granddaughter here, Lena, is going to be my helper here. So next. Okay, so I'll give you a little background. Our 10-day trip highlights, we were in the Sea of Galilee for 2 days. We were in the Bethlehem and Jerusalem area for 3 days. We went to Jericho and the Jordan River for 1 day. We were in the country of Jordan for a couple days. And then the last day was a drive back from Jordan to Tel Aviv, and we stopped in Jaffa for about a half a day. I'll give you some overall impressions. I'll try and keep my personal impressions because you'll come home with some. I can almost guarantee it to myself. And then I'll give you some things, if you haven't been yet, things to consider before you go and some post-trip reflections. Okay? So one of the things I tell people you need to do is if you can, before you go, and I'll talk about this at the end, get a book that talks about the Holy Land and study up, because the history is rich, but there's way more history than you can take in once you get there. So study up a little bit, and if you can find a map like this, what Israel looked like at the time of Jesus. And then if you go to the next one, Lena, and what it looks like today. The one thing that I was shocked that I guess I didn't realize and had missed it is how big the West Bank was. I always kind of thought the West Bank was a narrow strip along the Jordan River, but it's way bigger than that, and there's a whole lot of goes into that. So, all right? Oh, back up, Lena. Go up one, sorry. So one of the things, and I couldn't find my pointer, but if you can see up there in the top center of the left picture, is the Sea of Galilee. So that is where Christ started his preaching and ministering to the people to get them to believe that he was the risen Lord. And so he started up there, and that's where we started our trip. We spent 2 nights in Tiberias, and we'll see where those places go. Then we came down to Bethlehem. But he was born in Nazareth, and just to give you perspective, it's about a 10-hour walk from Nazareth to Capernaum, Sea of Galilee area. Now that's probably a good 10-hour walk, but it's a 10-hour walk. So it's not as far as you might think. And you wonder, why is it called the Sea of Galilee? I don't know why it's called that, but it's only about 4 times bigger than Cheney Reservoir. So it's not huge. You can see across it, but they still catch fish and stuff like that out of it, and you'll see that here in a minute. Go ahead. So this is our travel group after we made that 12-hour flight across the Atlantic from Chicago to Tel Aviv. We're all smiling, happy to be off the airplane probably. Go ahead. You'll have that same feeling. We flew Wichita to Chicago, Chicago directly to Tel Aviv. Okay? So one of the things I didn't know till I got there is many of the holy sites there are in the custody of the Franciscans. Not everybody knows that. We had that explained to us. St. Francis, during the Crusades, was in the Holy Land for a period of time, and he founded the orders of Friar Minor there in 1217. They've had custodial responsibilities of many of those sites since the mid-1300s, and officially since about the early 1800s, and includes churches in Israel, the West Bank, Jordan, and Syria. Notable churches and sites that we visited that are not under their care, you'll see some pictures later of the Church of the Multiplication of Loaves and Fishes, the Church of St. Anne in Jerusalem, and Mary's Well in Nazareth. We'll talk about those. The symbol you'll see for those that are going, or those that have been, you'll remember that is the Franciscan symbol, and typically you would see that on a sign outside of the church. Okay? Sea of Galilee. So Jesus was raised in the town of Nazareth. Most of his apostles were from this area. The sites we visited while we were there were Mount Tabor, Nazareth, Cana, Magdala, Capernaum, Mount of Beatitudes, and Tabitha. Okay? And those are all around the Sea of Galilee. Okay, go ahead. So that was the first shot. The center shot was we got there in the evening and the moon was up. And it is gorgeous. Tiberias is a resort area. A lot of people from Jerusalem either go up there to vacation, or there are some resort homes around the Sea of Galilee that you may see. The one thing I didn't know, because when I was a kid, 10 years old, back in the 60s, you heard about the Golan Heights during the Six-Day War. You can see the Golan Heights from this side. That's the Golan Heights right there. And once you get there, you can understand why Israel wanted to control it, because then the Arabs couldn't shoot at them from the other side. Okay? So the first place we went the first morning was Mount Tabor, the site of the Transfiguration. We did not see the Greek Orthodox churches there, but there is a Catholic and a Greek Orthodox church on that site. Father Darrell there in the picture on the left is in finished mass in the main chapel. It's one of the tallest hillsides in the area, so you can see when you're there, you'll see why Christ wanted to be there. Go ahead and enter. So the chapel that he was standing in is down here in the bottom. This big open area, it slopes down, so we were down there in the chapel. These mosaics, and these are literally individual pieces of stone mosaics and stained glass windows in the back. Very beautiful church. Okay. The next place we went was Nazareth, Jesus' boyhood home. It's the largest town in that area, and when I say large, I think it had about 25,000 people. There's numerous Holy Land sites in that area, Mary's Well, where the angel came and told her she was going to be the mother of God, the Church of the Annunciation, the Church of St. Joseph, and then we also walked through the old market area, and I think I may have a picture in here about it. Go ahead. So this is Mary's Well. It is a Greek Orthodox site. It's always decorated for Christmas, we were told. We were there in February, but I'm told it's always decorated for Christmas because that was when Mary, the angel came and talked to her. That spring-fed well still runs today. There's still water running through it. And this is the sanctuary area. And if you've been in a Greek Orthodox church, you'll recognize many of the appointments in here look like a Greek Orthodox church. It's called the Church of St. Gabriel. Okay? The next place we went was the Church of the Annunciation. If you've ever traveled to famous sites, one of the things I've come to find out, having traveled to Italy in the past, is our way of preserving them is to build a great big church over the top of them. And that's what's happened here. You'll see a picture of it on the upcoming slide. Don't go yet. The interesting thing on this slide is the entrance is a stone-built entrance, but all of the evangelists and other and saints and angels are carved into that. They're not painted on. They're actually carved into that rock and stone site. Okay? This is the inside of the church. The upper left picture is Mary's home. There is an altar down there that you can say Mass. Many of these churches, they'll have a main altar on the upper level. They'll have lower side altars down where, you know, visiting groups can say Mass. I think I saw from Father York's that they're planning to say Mass in many of these sites. And so you could be at the main altar, you could be in a side chapel in one of those. This is the main altar area. This is in the lower level. This is in the upper level. If it looks like those are stairs, they're not. They laid that stone floor in such a way to create that optical illusion that it looks like stairs. I've looked at that picture so many times since I've been back, but I'll tell you that floor is as flat as anything. And then this is the mural behind the main altar up there. The picture in the center, many of these churches have had international help if they went through a major restoration process. In respect to the United States, that's a picture of the Blessed Virgin Mary that was created in the United States and placed in that altar, in that church. Okay. And then the Church of St. Joseph is downstairs or around from where the Annunciation was. There's a stained glass window that depicts Mary and Joseph's betrothal. This is a Holy Family painting behind the area they thought the workshop was in. And then there's a statue of St. Joseph and Jesus in the area as well. Okay. From there, we went to Cana, the site of the wedding chapel. Father Darrell renewed our wedding vows for all the married couples on our trip. You've heard the story of the wedding feast at Cana and heard about the water jar. I never in my life thought that water jar was that big. So I think the servants, you hear the saying, the servants dip the wine out of the water jar. Now we know what they mean. That water jar has got to weigh a couple tons. Yeah, it's just huge. There's a couple of them there. That's a picture of our group outside the wedding chapel at Cana. Okay. Then from there, this is the next day, we went to Magdalene. It's the birthplace of Mary Magdalene. One of Jesus' signs, I'll stop there for a second, our tour guide, George, he's got 3 theological degrees. He's fluent in Greek, Hebrew, Arabic, and I think he knows some Aramaic. But he was telling us that, you know, Jesus was God, so in many ways we say miracles, but God can do anything. So it's not a miracle for God to do it. It's just a sign. He was trying to show us. So if you see that on some of my writings, it says signs. It means what we commonly may refer to as a miracle. It was a major first century seaport for local fishermen, so that was one of the reasons a lot of the apostles were from that area. That's where they, after they fished on the Sea of Galilee, they would come and sell their catch to the townspeople and the people that needed it. It's one of the, I don't think I have a picture, but outside of there, they've done some excavations recently and found it's one of the oldest synagogues, if not the oldest synagogue in the Galilee area, called the Migdal Synagogue. Okay. Then we went to the Mount of Beatitudes, where Jesus delivered his Sermon on the Mount. It overlooks the Sea of Galilee. You can tell the Sea of Galilee, you know, it's a Mediterranean country, but areas, we saw snow while we were there, but areas there's palm trees in full array. The area, the church is not that big. I would guess the church probably holds maybe 60 to 80 people at most, and that'd be pretty packed in. And then around the top is some stained glass windows in that lower left picture. You can see the 8 Beatitudes. It was a very pretty church, not very big, but very beautiful. Okay. Then we went to Tadka, where the sign of the church, multiplication of loaves and fishes, where he fed the masses. There's also nearby the Church of the Primacy of St. Peter after Christ was crucified and rose before he went ascended back into heaven. There was a story where there were some of the apostles had left Jerusalem and went back up to the Sea of Galilee area, and they saw somebody cooking breakfast for them. Lo and behold, it was our Lord and the rocks he was standing on outside there. And then that rock formation runs outside through the church walls and inside. So there's, again, a small church there called the Primacy of St. Peter, where Christ told Peter he was going to be the rock that the church was going to build on. Okay? And then the last place we went in the Galilee area was Capernaum. Home to 4 of the apostles. That left picture on the site is a Catholic church under the care of the Franciscans, very modern looking, but it's built that way because it's built over some ruins that were the home of Peter's mother-in-law. If you remember one of the biblical stories where Peter's mother-in-law is sick and Christ and the apostles have been there, they go over, she's in bed, Christ cures her, she gets up and starts feeding him. That is the room where that's at. The ruins underneath that church are Peter and mother-in-law. This is a picture of George. He was our tour guide, sharing his knowledge. He'd often do that. He set us down and said, okay, now you've taken in a lot, and I'm sure those of you that are going with Father York or with Father Darrell, a good tour guide, and they go through a lot of training to be a tour guide in the Holy Land. We'll do that for you when you get there. And then you hear him talk about him talking and preaching in the synagogue. This synagogue, where you're standing here, if you're looking there, you see the homes. If you turn around and look back the other way, you would see this synagogue here in the lower right of the picture. And it's still pretty well preserved. Okay, go ahead. And then the last thing we did, if you saw my shirt as I turned around, we've been on the Sea of Galilee. I think every trip, based on what we saw when we were there, takes a boat ride on the Sea of Galilee. I noticed on Father York's trip, if it follows what they have on the internet, you get on the boat and you sail across the Sea of Galilee to Capernaum, which that would be an interesting thing, because I think it said you have mass while you're on the boat. So if that's true, that would be pretty interesting. But anyhow, we sailed around. We sailed out about 25, 30 minutes and turned around and came back. We were on the boat about a little over an hour, I think. And when we got back, it was lunchtime, so we got to the restaurant, and they gave us a choice of fish prepared like we might eat it here, or fish prepared the traditional way. And so there's a picture of fish the traditional way. I know I've heard people say I never could look at that and eat it. Trust me, it's delicious. Okay? So from there, that was in late the afternoon. It was about an hour and a half drive, I think, from there down to Bethlehem. The hotel we stayed at for while we were touring Bethlehem and that area and Jerusalem, we stayed 5 nights in Bethlehem. I know it looks like Father York's trip, if they follow the itinerary I've seen here, they stay a couple nights in Bethlehem and 3 nights in Jerusalem. They're in two different hotels, which there's nothing wrong with that. It was just interesting to stay in Bethlehem, which is in the West Bank area. The Holy Land sites we visited there, the Church of the Nativity and the Basilica, the Chapel of the Milk Grotto, and I'll talk about those, the Church of St. Catherine of Alexandria and the underground chapels, and then Shepherd's Field. Okay? So the Basilica of the Nativity, one of the things George told us because of his knowledge of Greek history, if you remember, before the Romans took over Israel, it was part of the Greek empire. And so they spoke Greek, many of them did. And so a lot of the writings at the time of Christ were done in Greek. And so our George told us that if you go back and study those writings, you'll learn a lot about that. But anyhow, Emperor Constantine, his mother, St. Helena, was down there. They were already making pilgrimages 30 years after Christ died to these various sites. And she went down there 400 years later, saw this, and had him build this church on that site. If you see on the lower left-hand picture, that's our group going into the Church of Nativity. And you say, why wouldn't they put a regular door? When that church was built, most travel was on horseback. Marauders, raiders all rode horseback. So they wanted to keep people from being able to ride in, jump off their horse, steal something. So they made it where you had to get off the horse, squat down to get through the door. The center picture is the main sanctuary. I don't know how to describe it. You'll see some of the pictures from the Nativity and stuff like that. They have started doing some renovations and discovered that these mosaics are probably date back to pre-Crusade times, so back before the year 1000, they believe. So yet to be determined exactly how old they are. But the stuff they put over the top seems to have preserved it. Okay, next. So the first place we went once we got in the church was the Basilica of the Nativity. There's actually two grottos there. There's the Grotto of the Nativity where Christ was born, and then there's the Grotto of the Manger where he was laid after he was born. And they're both in this church. One of the things I tell people, if you get a chance to go, go. But if you get a chance to go on a smaller group, you know, 40 or less, something like that, go with the smallest group as you can, because if you notice that stairway up there is about single aisle down and people have to come out. And so you can lose a lot of time on some of these older places going down the single aisle stairway. But anyhow, so that's the stair down. The Grotto of the Manger's on the left. The Grotto of the Nativity's on the right. I'll stop there real quick with you. And I don't know if Father Yorks talked about this, and you heard a little bit about this on our trip, but I'll tell you, take your rosaries, holy objects you want to get blessed or get an indulgence on, as you touch into that, you get an indulgence on those holy spots. And so anytime we went to a holy spot, we'd all lay our rosaries, our medals, and stuff like that on those holy spots. Next.
What town was that in?
That was in Bethlehem. Yep. Chapel of the Mill Grotto. Does anybody know the story of the Chapel of the Mill Grotto? So when Christ was born and the Magi didn't go back to see Herod, Herod put out the edict, kill the firstborn of all male babies. So Jesus and Mary were warned by the angel to leave, so they started to leave. Well, they hid in this cave, and Mary was nursing Jesus at the time because they didn't have milk bottles and all that kind of stuff like we have today. And a drop of her milk fell and hit the ground and caused there to be a white dust in that cave. And so they say, if you're trying to get pregnant, you take that white dust and put it in your drink and drink it and you'll get pregnant. And so I hear the laughter. So I'll tell the story that Father Darrell told us. One of his first trips, his two sisters and a niece went. One of his sisters brought some back. She had a daughter that was trying to get pregnant. They were all gathered for a family gathering. Can't remember if they said they were watching a football or baseball game, but they were all gathered. They put some of the milk dust, and I don't know if it's known to her or not. I didn't quite get the whole story. But they put some of the milk dust in her beer. 9 months later, Tuesday, she delivered a baby. And on the feast of the Immaculate Conception or the Annunciation, one of the seven. So, I believe it works based on that. As my statistics professor has said, a sample size of one may not be sufficient, but it's good enough for me in that case. A picture that you don't see very often, and it doesn't show up in this picture, this is a statue of Mary nursing the baby Jesus. And then here is a painting of the same thing. Not a picture we probably see a lot of around here.
Okay, next.
And then there's some more of the Chapel of the Mill Grotto, the stairs down to the cave and stuff like that. Okay. Oh, I will say before she goes, on the left-hand side, there are some nuns there that have the Franciscans administer the site. That is a monstrance. That big gold thing in the center is a monstrance that has perpetual adoration. There is a nun kneeling in front of that monstrance 24 hours a day, praying 365 days a day. And it was beautiful. That picture doesn't do it justice. Okay. The next place we went, it was close by, was the church that adjoins the Basilica of the Nativity. It's the Church of St. Catherine of Alexandria. It is the church that all of Bethlehem's Catholic population, which, by the way, is less than 2% of the total population in the West Bank area, in most of Israel, that's pretty much true. That's where they go. That's their parish church. There's a network of caves underneath where chapels are located. Next one. Father Darrell celebrated in the Mass in the Chapel of St. Joseph. Adjacent to that was the Chapel of St. Jerome. There's a chapel for the Holy Innocents, all the babies that were killed, and then some other, there, I don't remember, I couldn't find or remember what that lower right was called. And then you would see in scriptures and inscribed inscriptions in some of the stone in some of these various chapels. And I'll talk a little bit more about that when we get to the Holy Sepulchre. Okay? So the last place we went in the Bethlehem area was Shepherd's Field, where the angels announced to the shepherds that Christ was born so they could go visit him. The lower left-hand picture, if you take those blocks away, you have a cave. But they've turned that cave into this worship site here with an altar, and you can see where they've had fires in there. The roof is black, so that stone front was built and added to kind of protect this area so they could use it as a worship site. Okay. From Bethlehem, we went to Ein Kerem. I'd never heard of Ein Kerem before, at least in my memory. I probably had heard. I was probably sitting in church, and there was probably a reading about it, and I just don't remember. But we got there. Ein Kerem's the summer home for Saint Elizabeth and Zechariah, Saints Elizabeth and Zechariah, birthplace of their son, St. John the Baptist. This is where Mary visited Elizabeth when they were both expecting. It's a suburb of Jerusalem. It's about 5 miles west. It's about 8 miles from Bethlehem. It's about 75 miles from Nazareth. So think about that on a donkey. That's probably a 10-day trip on a donkey, going from Bethlehem to Nazareth in that area. Anyhow. Several important holy sites, the Church of the Visitation, where you'll see a couple pictures, Mary Spring and the Rock of Concealment, and the Church of St. John the Baptist, okay? So the Church of the Visitation, the Magnificat, because that was the prayer Mary recited when she met Elizabeth out there at the fountain. It was built by the Crusaders over the ruins of what tradition, and you may have saw that on an earlier slide. A lot of these, when it's described, it says what tradition says happened there. So this is one of those that says tradition. The church was built back in the 400s by St. Helena, mother of Constantine, and inside that is Mary's spring in the rock at the ceiling. Okay? Oh, back up. The Magnificat is listed in 50 plus languages on plaques, just like that. And that's about a 4x6 plaque all around that church. It's pretty amazing. Okay? Inside the church, there's the well where Mary and Elizabeth met. There's a statue of the two of them out there. The rock of concealment, just like Mary and Joseph having to get away from Herod's soldiers, Zachariah and Elizabeth had to protect St. John the Baptist from that same thing. That's the rock they hid behind. And then there's a main sanctuary upstairs, and there was a mass going on at the time we were there, so we couldn't do anything more than take one picture. Okay. And then we went to the Church of St. John the Baptist. It was a beautiful church, undergoing renovation, and they ran into a problem. How many of us had parents that collected that blue and white kitchenware that from England or over in Europe or something like that? In this church, and it doesn't show up very well, all of those blue squares are little 3x3 or 4x4 tiles of that blue design, I guess you're going to call it that. And they started renovating it, and they don't know how they can replace it because they can't find it anymore. So they kind of stopped trying to figure out what they're going to do. So it was under renovation. But this is the site where St. John's born. Another. Okay, go ahead. So we got next place we went then, and we're still staying in Bethlehem, but we're traveling into Jerusalem now. So because of our former president, Mr. Trump, went and talked to the Israelis about how they build a wall, because they built a wall all the way around the West Bank. It's 2,000 miles long. We were told it took them 4 years to build it. And it's not a straight wall. It curves. Any place there's water, the wall goes around it and puts it on the Jerusalem side. And so if you're on the West Bank side or the Palestinian side and you need water, you get a ration from the Israelis. So it was pretty interesting. Kidron Valley, we'll talk about that. Church of All Nations, we actually went to there twice. I know it's on the itinerary for Father York's trip, as most all of these are. So let me just go to the next slide and we'll save a little time. Okay. So the Kidron Valley is this valley here in Jerusalem that runs along what is the walled-in city, and then the Garden of Gethsemane is over here. Up here in this area right there. So it's a valley that runs through there. This is it. It's kind of a parkway now, kind of a green space in the area. They preserved it. There's a couple different pictures of the Kidron Valley. You can see some of the ruins from some of the stuff that happened there during this time. Okay. So the first place we went, we got the opportunity. Our tour guide had found out there was Eucharistic adoration the night we got in back from our trip over to Ayn Karim. So we had a quick dinner and said, let's get back on the bus. We're going to go to Eucharistic adoration at the Church of All Nations. So we thought, great. Hadn't read my book far enough to know exactly what we were going to see, but the bottom left picture is the Rock of Agony. That's where Jesus went the night that he said his prayers before he was crucified, and that's where he wept in his agony. We got there early. We were the first tour group there. So we got the good seats around the Rock of Agony. We got to place our holy objects on it, say prayers there. And then as Eucharistic adoration started, 12 young priests, probably 2 or 3 years out of seminary, walk in. They kind of gave us a dirty look, and I think they were thinking they were going to get the good seats because their bishop, we found out later, was helping with the Eucharistic adoration. I think that's him back there in the bishop's hat, Father Darrell. So anyhow, it was great. They started singing. We should have recorded it. They need a recording contract. It was the most moving thing I think I've ever been to in a church, is to hear these young men sing. And the next thing that happened was one of them pulled out his phone, went and sat down at this very gorgeous pipe organ, and started playing the organ. I mean, it almost brings tears to my eyes when I think about it. The church is called the Church of All Nations, and it's another church that many nations help fund the renovations and stuff for. Inside of it, on the next picture, that's the mosaic where Christ is at that altar. There's the main entrance. That was taken the next 2 days later in the middle of the day, and I'll explain how that happened. Go ahead. Outside of the Rock of Agony is the Garden of Gethsemane. That, in the center picture, that is a 1,600 plus year old olive tree in the Garden of Gethsemane. Over in the lower left is the U.S. Seal from the United States because of the help they did. And then another side altar with Jesus and the mob as they come to arrest him. Okay? St. Peter in Gallicantu was the church built over the area where St. Peter denied Christ three times when he was being questioned by High Priest Caiaphas. It's built on the eastern slope of Mount Zion, so if you're looking out from here, this would be the Kidron Valley out here. This is the eastern slope of Mount Zion. There's a mural on the outside. And the interesting thing, the cross on the peak of the church has a rooster on it. I couldn't get the crow that's sitting on the rooster to fly away. It does contain the dungeon where Christ was held. Go to the next picture. So here's the dungeon. There's a picture of how Christ was lowered into the dungeon. And that's how they lowered him out. This is a walkway that after they questioned him, they would have taken him back to Pilate's house and would have followed that walkway. Okay, next. Seneca the Upper Room, another interesting story George, our tour guide, told us is that this room is controlled by the Israeli Foreign Tourism Ministry, and so you can't say a mass or anything in there. He believes, and he's got other scholars that agree with him, that this room probably doesn't date back to the time of Christ. Even that's where every trip will go on this trip. And the reason he says that is these penguins that you see here in this column would have been dated to the Crusader time period. It was also controlled. That was where a Muslim holy thing was stationed. And then some of the architecture dates to the Crusader period. What he believes they've started to find now is a second location, go ahead, is in a lower area outside of that area. Rita Redder, a member of our trip, those of you who know Kathy Folke, her daughter. But anyhow, you go down some stairs and there is a great big room back here, but it was too dark to really get a good picture. But there's a room back there. Again, this is controlled by the Franciscans. This is a side chapel they built next to the upper room because you couldn't say mass in the upper room because of who controls it. Okay? And then one place we go, I saw on their trip, they're going, I don't know if they'll study this, but many of our group says we wish we would have went here first. This is covers about, I guess an acre, maybe an acre and a half. It's a model of Jerusalem at about AD 60, somewhere in that time frame. Herod's palace, the temple, it's all there. A gentleman built that. His son was killed in the Six-Day War in the 60s. He built this model. It took him several years to build it. And then development happened and they had to move it, so they moved it over here. But it's fascinating the detail that is in there with all these bricks and everything for that. Adjacent to that, this is their version, Israel's version of the Smithsonian Institution. The Dead Sea Scrolls that were found, and we'll talk about that in an upcoming slide, are housed in the building that's under here. This is actually the roof of a building. Underneath that is a display area where we couldn't take any pictures where the Dead Sea Scrolls are housed. Okay. One of the things that I think almost every tour group does, they do what they call the Palm Sunday Walk. So you start up on Mount Zion and walk your way down the path that Jesus would have followed as he came into Jerusalem prior to his death on the cross. So it starts at the Mount of Olives, finishes the Eastern Gate of Old Jerusalem. So you'll see some churches. This here is outside the church of Pater Noster, which stands for Our Father in Latin. These are all various versions of the Our Father in different languages, and I think there's 100 and some different ones outside there. And it just goes all around the church. So that's the church of Pater Noster. Okay, go ahead and lean in. And then you see a lot, so the walk is somewhat steep in spots, and on either side you'll see Jewish cemeteries. And in some cases, because, you know, there's only so much room, what are you going to do with them? When they become just bones, they gather the bones and put them in smaller boxes so they can reuse the burial spots for full-size bodies. Here's George again talking to us. This is the Eastern Gate. Unfortunately, we didn't walk, although we're fortunate, we didn't walk all the way over. There's a four-lane thoroughfare through here that's really busy. The Church of Dominus Levitt, Jesus stands for Jesus Wept, is on the path as well. Okay. One of the things we did, and I think if you travel with Alice and Sticky Catholic Travel today, she tries to do this on all her trips, is she has what she calls an immersion there. So our group of 20 divided up into two groups, and we went to two different local Christian family homes. They're actually brothers, Saliba Safar and Musa Safar, and they fixed dinner for us. We gave them a small donation for each one of us, but it was really informative to talk to them. I was fortunate to go to Saliba's family. His niece is in the green. She's like any 14-year-old girl. She wasn't there for most of the dinner because she was at basketball practice. My wife interrogated her little brother to the point, he's a first grader. How many languages does he know, Denise? Three?
Three.
Latin, Arabic, and English, right?
Arabic.
Arabic. So if your group has, I don't know how many groups do this, but if your group has that opportunity, I would encourage you to take the opportunity. You just might want to close your eyes while they're driving you from the hotel to their house. Okay, go. So the next thing, so we got back that night, and George said, don't stay up and shut the bar down tonight because we're going to get up early. This was Saturday night. Sunday morning, we had to get up early. And it was Sunday morning, Super Bowl morning. So most of us, like George suggested, went to bed. Father Darrell stayed up because he had to watch the Super Bowl because his beloved Chiefs were playing. But anyhow, so we got up at 3, got our 3:30 a.m. wake-up call. We're on the bus by, or 3 a.m. wake-up call, on the bus by 3:30. We are at the Via Della Rosa, which is the Way of Sorrow. It's the way Christ walked when he carried his cross to Calvary. And you ask, why would you start at 4 a.m.? Well, it's through the Muslim quarter of Old Jerusalem, and the Muslims are not very friendly to Christians. And I'll just leave it at that. So we started, and as you go, and you can see it's well marked. Go ahead. Each one of the stations are marked with one of these little symbols that depict what happened in that station. So these are stations 1 through 6. Go ahead. Here's stations 7, 8, 9, and 10. When you reach 10, you're outside the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. As you can probably tell, my picture there didn't turn out any good. I tried to scrape one off the internet. It wasn't very good. But yeah. And then stations 11, 12, 13, and 14 are inside the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which is where we're going next. Okay. So the last four, the first one, Chapel of Our Lady of Sorrows, it's upstairs. Chapel of the Crucifixion. So this is the rock, the top of the rock, where Christ's cross would have been placed when he was crucified. And then after he was taken off the cross, this is the stone he would have been laid on for the women and people to anoint him before they put him in the tomb. And then there's the tomb of Christ. This is all, again, one of those things that built a great, big, huge church over these holy places. And so that's where the tomb's at. So the interesting thing, if you've been, you probably know this, if you haven't been, it's the church is controlled by three different major religious organizations. Greek Orthodox, Catholic, and Armenian Orthodox. What's the old saying, when three people are in charge? Nobody's in charge. So they struggle to get stuff done there, but they get along and eventually stuff gets done. We were told it takes a while. And then the Coptic, Syriac, and Ethiopian Orthodox communities also. The ownership structure was established by the Ottoman Turks back in the 1700s. And the other interesting thing is, and it still happens today, and I don't know too much about them, two Muslim families control the key that unlocks the door. Because they were unlocking it just as we finished the Way of the Cross when we got there about 6 a.m. It's the holiest site in Christianity. The edicule, which means Christ's tomb or little house, inside that church, there are at least 30 different worship spaces. I think I've got a picture of a couple of them coming up. The first one was built by Constantine in 326. It was destroyed by the Persians and rebuilt, destroyed by the Muslims and partially built, and then the Crusaders in 1149 completed the reconstruction.
Go ahead.
So inside the church, we were again blessed to be able to have Mass there at the tomb of Jesus. In the center picture, top center picture, there are other priests that had groups there along with ours. In the back are some Franciscans that help administer the site, helping with the singing. Right across, if you were standing where these people are, just behind them is this Greek Orthodox worship area. I snuck back there after we were done to get this picture. And then, you know, I had to ask myself, how did they know this was the rock? Well, that rock runs about four stories from top to bottom. This is the base of the rock, and they say when Christ died, the blood ran through the rock down here to the bottom, and this was where Adam might have been buried. And so they call that the Chapel of Adam at the base of Calvary. So there's a Greek Orthodox worship site. This is the primary Catholic worship site. It's called the Chapel of Apparition. That stone that you see a couple of our people touching is a stone from Pilate's house, which Jesus would have been tied to when he was questioned. And then the last thing, I made the comment about if three people are in charge, nobody's in charge. One of the things it's famous for is what's called the status quo or a movable ladder. That ladder has been there for 200 plus years. They don't know who's responsible for it, so they won't let anybody move it. It's been there for 200 plus years. Some high school kids, imagine this, got the wild idea, well, let's just go see what happens if we move it. And it created, you know, everybody wanted to accuse everybody else, and they put it back and bolted it to the wall. So, go ahead. Inside the tomb of Christ, these aren't my pictures. I'll announce up front, it's so dark in there when we were there that I couldn't get good pictures. So George, our tour guide, happened to be going through the area 2 weeks later, and I scraped these out of his video. But that's what you see in there. This is the tomb he was laid on here in the center. This is the rock they would have rolled across the tomb, and then there's an altar there. If you get a small group, there's actually a group of eight people that were having Mass, and we were having Mass outside. Then, if you go to Jerusalem, you about have to go here, even though we're not Jewish, but it's the holiest place in Judaism. It's what's called the Wailing Wall or the Western Wall. It was the retaining wall that Herod the Great built in 20 BC to support the Jewish temple that's there. Interesting how things change over time. Is right behind that wall is one of the most holy Muslim sites in all of the world. And I'll show you a picture a little bit later. The men and women have different sides. You write a prayer, you go to your side. On a little piece of paper, you go to your side, stick it in a crack in the wall, say your prayer, and then leave. Women and men have separate sides, okay? And then from there, we went to the Church of St. Anne. This is where Mary's parents live, St. Anne and St. Joachim, again located in the Muslim quarter. It's near the healing pools of Bethesda, and Father Darrell was able to give all the pilgrims a blessing for good health with holy oil from the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Next, please. So this is some of the Church of St. Anne. This is the pools of Bethesda, and back up in this area, those pools, again, like the Mary's Well, they still run. This is looking across the pools at the Church of St. Anne. It's one of the churches that is controlled by a group of priests out of Egypt, okay? Or Africa, I can't remember. So I mentioned the Temple Mount. That is the church, the Muslim church that's adjacent to the Wailing Wall. We got pointed out one of the places we walked to catch our bus was near a cemetery. If you remember the movie Schindler's List, Oscar Schindler is buried in that cemetery. There's a sign up. We didn't get to see this church, but you could see those gold domes from about everywhere around the holy sites. The Church of Mary Magdalene is the Russian Orthodox Church. Okay. Next. And then we went from there, we went to Bethany to see the tomb of Lazarus. Again, not everybody, the lower right picture is about all you can see because the Muslims own the actual tomb site. We did get to have Mass over there and were joined by a Catholic group out of Minnesota. Okay. Next we went to the Jordan River area in Jericho, Jordan River area where you get water from the River Jordan, Jesus' baptism site. They actually believe his baptism site was on the Jordan side of the Jordan River. We went there later, but we won't get into that. I don't think many of the trips go that way.
Okay.
We saw the Mount of Temptation. This is a Greek Orthodox. It used to be a university. Now it's just a monastery up there. Stopped in Jericho for lunch. It's the oldest city in the world. It can date its time back to 10,000 years. Several ladies, Terry, my wife, Michelle Ballman, local college girl, all had to get some local headdress. Okay. Then we went to the Qumran, which is where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. Means two moons, because when you look out, you're looking in the top right picture out over the Dead Sea. When the moon is in the sky, it reflects down on the Dead Sea because it's usually so calm, and so they call it two moons. The lower left picture is cave four. There's about at least 11 caves. There were 14,000 scrolls found in that cave that can tire the entire Old Testament. And it was written by a group called Essene people, and they were a Jewish group that were very conservative. And they thought Jerusalem was getting too progressive, so they moved out to the desert. Okay. While we were there, we got to go to the Dead Sea, got to have a beer at the lowest bar in the world. If you go in the water, I waded in the water. There was a couple in our group that actually put their swimsuits on and floated. You can't sink. The water is so salty. Okay. It's an interesting experience. Go, Lena. I think she's getting tired. This is on the Jordan side, so I'm going to stop here a second because I can see other faces maybe get tired. Does anyone have questions before I just ramble on? And I'll skip some of the Jordan pictures in the interest of time. Anybody have questions? Yeah, go ahead. Well, some of the caves date back to Christ's time.
Right.
Right.
The buildings on top of them.
Anywhere from probably 300-400 AD to 1800 AD. Yeah. It just depends on the building. If it was, you know, that Jerusalem's been fought over for years. And so it was depends on whether it was destroyed when the Muslims fought the Crusaders, when the Crusaders fought the Muslims. And it's been conquered many different times if you go back and read history. So it varies depending on which site you're at. Lena? Go down and go a couple more. I'm going to skip some. This is Mount Nebo. This is where Moses saw the Holy Land. I'll just point out one thing. This lower picture, from that vantage point, he could see Jerusalem and all the places in the Holy Land from that area. But he never actually made it to the Holy Land. He died before he got there. Okay? Keep going. That Wadi Musa, the Lost City of Petra. I mentioned somebody, if you remember the third Raiders of the Lost Ark movie, that's the famous thing. There was a scene in that movie shot there. So it's a cultural site. This dates back to about 4000 BC, if I remember right. They were amazing sculptors in their time. Okay, go. One of the religious sites we saw, the statue in the upper left-hand corner, has bled blood several times between 2010 and 2014. Pope Benedict approved it back before he died, and then Pope Francis since. Okay. And then we went to Jerash, which is the ancient city of Gerasa. It's the best preserved ruins outside of Pompeii, is what we were told. Okay. Keep going. I'm not going to stop here. Some other memorable sites. If you go to Bethlehem, at least the gate we came in, they call it the Waldorf Hotel. It's a museum and actually a hotel. It's owned by some artist guy from London. He's got one similar, I guess, in London somewhere. It's pretty interesting. These three are from there. This is from our hotel. We stayed at the St. Joseph Hotel in Bethlehem. This is the owner. He would greet us every morning, and when we got back in the evening, after our day's activity, he'd stop and have a glass of wine with us before we went home. Okay? Some other sites you see in Bethlehem. I hate to say this because I want everybody to go, but they have a trash problem. They, you know, and you'd think as desert as it is, maybe it's too rocky, they could have a landfill. They do have a trash problem. The artwork on that wall I talked about, those are pictures of that wall that surrounds the West Bank. If you didn't walk up and see it right up close, you would think there was a hole in that wall and you were looking out. That's how well that picture is done. And then I guess they were a fan of our former president because they got him on the wall. And then May Come Is Not Walls. And then from this picture, what I wanted to show there is that building up in the buildings up in the top center, if you've heard on, ever heard on the news of the Jewish settlement in the West Bank area, that's what that is. That looks, what it looks like is if you've driven down Mays Road and saw those new apartments they built just south of 45th Street, that's what it looks like, and that's what it is. And so the Jewish people are immigrating, Jewish people from Eastern Europe, Russia, Poland, places like that, to settle in there, paying them to have kids, because the Jewish people that have lived there most of their life aren't having kids, so they're worried that they're going to be overpopulated by Muslims. So there's 12 of those sites now, I believe, and you'll see them all over the West Bank area, especially around Jerusalem. Go ahead. What made it memorable? Great traveling companions. You'll get to know your traveling companions very well. We had a great tour guide. That made it good. Probably the one thing is every time I'm sitting in church and I hear a reading, and either by the lector or by Father Darrell, having been there, it takes on a whole new meaning. I think anybody that's been would probably agree with that. I talked a little bit about it when I had the picture up. The immersion with the local family was really wonderful. And then lasting impressions, lasting friendships. Our group, you know, we traveled together for 10, 11 days. We've had one reunion about 6 weeks after we got back. We're having another one in October. I think we've developed some lasting friendships that are going to continue. Go ahead. And then the other thing people ask me, what makes a rewarding, a good tour operator that's been there, I think, you know, the size of the travel group, if you get too many people, you get over about 40, it's, you know, you may have some issues. Your in-country tour guides, pre-trip preparation, I'll talk a little bit about that. And then I know when I first started traveling, my wife and I, probably 10, 15 years ago, we never bought travel insurance. Today I would tell you, you don't know what's going to happen, buy travel insurance. Okay, go ahead. So some recommended books. Somebody asked me this in my last presentation. Probably the first, I tried to read the first one, Jesus. There's a couple books Pope Benedict wrote about Jesus of Nazareth. I had trouble reading them. I did read Blood Brothers by Elias Shakur. I would encourage everybody that goes to the Holy Land to read that book. And here's why. He was a young man, about 10 years old in 1947, 48 time frame. He lived on a fig farm up in the northern part of Israel near the Syrian or Jordanian border, whichever, I guess it's Syria. Or Lebanon border. The Israeli army came in when the Axis or the World War II powers that won World War II decided that was going to be the homeland for the Jewish people. The army kind of formed ahead of the government, got kind of out there in front of them, and they went into a lot of the towns up along the northern border because they were fearful that the Arabs would come south, and they kicked the people basically out of their towns, said, hey, we're going to check some things out for a couple weeks, and then never let them back. In the town Elias Shakur grew up in called Biram, if you look it up on the internet, you can find the story. In the town he grew up in, when the government finally told the military you had to get out and let the people have their town back, they pulled their tanks out, turned their tanks around, leveled the town, and then left. So they never did get the town back. It opened my eyes to things you will see while you're there, especially if you're going with Father York and you're staying in Jerusalem. I think you will experience some of that. The Dream of the Tomb by Robert Payne is about the Crusades. We're Catholic. The Crusades were trying to protect a lot of these sites. Reading that also opens your eyes that they maybe weren't always on the up and up. But it's a good book. And then I didn't get to read the other two before I went. I mentioned a map or a book. My wife bought this book, Come and See. It's a Catholic Guide to the Holy Land. Great book. Has a lot of good information in it. Get you a map. If anybody has time after I brought all the stuff we prepared or bought to prepare for this trip, we kept it in a notebook if you want to look at it. Comfortable clothes and good walking shoes. You don't need anything fancy. You need a really, I would encourage you to take two good pair of walking shoes. And if you have tired feet, wear compression socks. Two good pair of shoes because you're going to do a lot of walking. Because some of it's not really. And then the last thing, which surprised us, because we figured we'd have to trade American dollars for shekels. No, just take American dollars I stopped at a convenience store one day. I wanted a Coke, and somebody says the Jordanian almonds are really good. So I thought, I like almonds. I'll try it. I had $3.50 worth of purchase. I gave the guy a $5 bill. I got a dollar bill and two quarters back in Israel. So, okay? And then we've talked all this, so go ahead. So if anybody's got questions, I'll stick around after it's done. I've got a notebook up here. If you want some of this information, I can cut pages out of here. Like I saw several of you taking pictures of the books. I can email those out to you. If you give me your name and email, I'd be happy to do that. And then if anybody has questions, doesn't want to ask in the big group, I'll stand around and chat for a while if anybody wants to chat about it. Father Pat? Wife, yes?
One thing I want to say is before we went, I was thinking about the Gallup College and thought, this is actually where Christ walked. You get there and you see the site and you see how long people have been worshiping in those sites. It becomes so real. You know,
I guess I'd say one last thing. I see cameras, phones, and honestly, a lot of the new phones have cameras almost as good as the one I carry. While we were there, I took 1,800 pictures with a Canon camera. Wayne Younger's one of our travel companions over there. I think he took 1,200 with his camera. And I'd write a little journal entry to try and recap what I saw that day. When I got home, I put all those journal entries together. It was 13 pages, single-spaced, in a Word document. So I turned those into a photo journal, so if anybody wants to look at it, I've got a couple copies up here. It ended up being 95 pages, and it only has about, maybe a third of the photos we took in here. So it's a memorable trip. It's one you'll remember the lifetime, and I won't say I've been there and I won't go back. I think I would go back. It won't be the next place I go, but I'd like to go back. So.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
It's very nice. Thank you all for coming. Jillian there? Where's the boss? Where is she? What are we doing next one? Do we have one for next one? We haven't nailed down yet. All right.
We are.